The contents of the lab report are meant for educational purposes only. They are not meant to be misconstrued as medical diagnosis or treatment advice.
Good job.
Today on the Lab Report, we're going to talk to Julia Glanz.
We're going to talk about diet, nutrition, lifestyle changes, and women's hormones.
I always get nervous talking to, like, influencers.
I know. The world of medicine can be challenging. Clinicians and patients are always looking for more options, more effective treatments, and in the end, more answers. Functional and integrative medicine focuses on addressing root causes of disease. Here at Genova Diagnostics, we've watched this field evolve and grow for over 35 years. We've not only adapted, we've led. Join us as we talk about functional medicine, laboratory testing, and optimizing health. Welcome to the Lab Report.
I've seen one cicada so far.
Should we be seeing the cicadas now?
I think they're supposed to be here.
This is like
I saw the one. He was on the side of my house. I was like, where's your friends? Hello.
Hi, Michael Chapman. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Patty Devers?
Crushing it.
Nice.
Well, are we really in prime cicada zone here?
From everything I've read, they're supposed to be destroying things right now. Destroying buildings, livelihoods.
We're not seeing them.
I've just seen the one. I don't know what's going on. I'm starting to get worried.
Well, I didn't grow up with cicadas being overrun, so this is going to be new for me.
It might not be, given the trajectory. It might be a big nothing burger. Anyway, this is a podcast brought to you by Genova Diagnostics, where we talk about functional medicine, specialty lab testing, and integrative therapeutics. Thank you for joining.
Yes, thank you so much for returning to the show. But if you're new, welcome.
Hi.
And hopefully go to iTunes or Spotify, maybe subscribe to the show, rate, review, share it with your friends.
If you have pictures of cicadas and they're overrunning your town or territory, send them to podcast@gdx.net. I want verification that this thing is actually happening.
And I want to see them. Although I've seen other videos of them, it kind of creeps me out. But if you have these pictures, please send them to me.
Yes, please do that. And it's probably enough cicada talk for now, I would say.
Agreed.
We'll save the rest of the cicada questions for David Attenborough when we get him on next week. Right?
Okay.
So, what are we talking about today?
Well, today we're going to talk to Julia Glanz, who is a registered dietitian. She's a strength and conditioning coach. And she also is pretty knowledgeable in women's hormones and how it relates to sports and fitness and diet. So
awesome.
It's going to be
super
really
important
great.
Topics that are very interrelated and a lot of people are struggling with all of those things that we mentioned. So this should be good. Let's talk to her.
Without further ado, let's call Julia Glanz.
Patty?
Yeah.
Do you know who we have today?
Oh, I know.
Julia Glanz. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about Julia Glanz. Julia Glanz is a registered dietitian with her master's degree in nutritional science, a certified strength and conditioning specialist, former college strength and conditioning coach, and a former Division I soccer player. Julia has an online nutrition practice where she specializes in women's hormones and works with women to optimize the key hormones affecting their energy, metabolism, and body composition through strategic nutrition and lifestyle changes. In addition, Julia has written two ebooks, A Women's Guide to Optimizing Health, Hormones, and Metabolism, and The Ultimate Guide to Intermittent Fasting for Women, and is currently the director of nutrition for an online fitness company, Living Fit. And with that, thank you
Welcome, Julia.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yay. Well, Julia, like many coaches, you have a pretty impressive athletic background. So tell us about your journey and what inspired you to choose nutrition as a focus.
Yeah. So I grew up playing soccer and I was never the fastest or fittest. And I was actually the least out of shape. But I vividly remember one game. And I was on my period. My coach didn't know this at the time, but it was in high school. I was about 14 years old and I was like bent over in pain in the middle of a game. And like nobody just stopped running in the middle of a soccer game. So he thought I was tired. Anyway, long story short, that night he called me out in front of the team and he was like, Julia, if you continue to do what you're doing, referencing my lack of fitness.
Wow.
He said, your soccer career is going to be done. Wow. And that really stuck a dagger in my heart because my goal was to play college soccer. So I'm like, okay, crap. So I had two decisions to make. I could be like, okay, I'm unfit. I'm going to throw in the towel and just move on with my life. Or I'm going to work on my fitness. So I chose the latter and I spent every second in the gym from that moment on, just working on my fitness. And when you're that out of shape, Everything works. So I quickly saw an improvement, not only in my fitness, but performance on the field, which led to confidence outside the field. And I just became obsessed with improving myself and my body for performance. Yeah. And that was when I was like 14, 15. So I knew from that moment I wanted to be a personal trainer and nutritionist. Aww. I had no idea what that looked like at the time, but that's been my goal since then. And I ended up getting a full ride to play soccer at the University of Arizona. Wow. And as soon as I got there, I fell in love with the weight room, wow, of course. Uh-huh. And I just became a sponge to my strength and conditioning coaches. And I spent every single second I could in the weight room just learning and absorbing. And that was really, I wanted to be a college strength coach just because of the influence and impact my coaches had on me. And I started off in college studying to become a registered dietitian as well. However, during my sophomore year of college, I took chem and bio during season, mm-hmm, and I almost failed both of them. Oh. I'm like passed barely. And I'm like, this is so hard for me. Like my roommates were physiology majors too, and they passed with flying colors. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well maybe like this major isn't for me. Anyway, so I ended up creating my own major. This is a long-winded story. I ended up creating my own major to study nutrition and physiology, knowing I wanted to be a college strength coach. I'm like, I don't need to take organic chemistry and whatever, all these classes. Right. Anyway, fast forward after college, I went back to get my master's degree to become a registered dietitian. Had to take all those science classes again, you know, with your nutritional biochemistry, microbio, mm-hmm, all of those. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so got into my master's program and became a registered dietitian. And here we are. But it wasn't until, you know, a few years ago that I started diving into women's health specifically. And that is because of all the stories I started hearing from clients, the same exact stories over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, all that being said, that's kind of how it transitioned into nutrition, women's health. And yeah,
I think we can thank your coach for all of this, inspiring you, right? Sure.
his sensitivity. Yes. Yeah. So your business Living Fit, you're seeing clients there, and you know, many patients, I'm sure, like in your client base, are looking for the question around diet, right? And with your nutrition background, like we're always talking about what's the right diet for either weight loss or even performance optimization. Like, where do you start with a new client when they ask at least our favorite question, like, what do I even eat?
Yeah, I give them the magic pill.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, that's what they want too. That works.
That's really what it comes down to. No, before I start and meet with any client, this is kind of like the process that I go through. So I will have them fill out a diet recall form. And this just gives me an idea of their current eating habits, which includes what they eat, how much they ate, where they ate, and kind of a hunger assessment before they ate. And I have them fill this out for a couple of reasons. One, knowing from my standpoint, the macro and micronutrient profile of the foods they're eating, mm-hmm, I can then have an understanding of potential nutrient insufficiencies. And two, because having them fill out this form before we meet starts to bring awareness to some of the components of nourishing their body other than just the quantity of food. And I truly believe that when it comes to quote unquote the best diet or what someone should eat, how someone eats is just as important as what, when, and how much. Mm-hmm. So yeah. After I look at their diet recall form, we'll have an initial call. And this is where I ask them a pretty extensive list of questions. Mm-hmm. So just to get to know them a bit more. And the questions cover everything from health history to bowel movements to their menstrual cycle. And of course, we'll go over their goals, their barriers, likes, dislikes, where they go grocery shopping, what kind of kitchen items they have access to or mm-hmm. feel confident using. Yeah. And then a few other lifestyle factors like who are they making food for? Do they even enjoy making food,
right,
et cetera?
Right.
And all that being said, this only after I receive all this information and then look over any blood work that they've sent me, I'll make recommendations on what they should eat.
I love those questions.
The contextual aspects, I think, are something that go very much overlooked.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, Patty doesn't like cooking.
And thanks, so, Michael.
The questionnaire.
Me either.
The questionnaire.
Sorry, Julia. We'll go to Michael's house for dinner.
But, like, even how many people are you making food for? Like, that dramatically changes what you're able to do and the time limits and all that sort of stuff. So that's
I love those questions. But do you think, then, that we can get all the nutrients we need from our diet alone, or are you a proponent of supplementation, or how do you make that distinction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And while I would love to say that you can get all your nutrients from food, I don't think that is the case here, at least in America, and here's why. So when it comes to specific nutrients that I recommend in certain foods or through supplementation, like, in an ideal world, I'll have my clients do a NutriVal test from Genova Diagnostics to make the distinction of what they need. Cool. But if that's not feasible, I use their diet recall form, our initial assessment, and then their primary reason for them coming to see me, just as a baseline for supplement recommendations. So the women I work with typically have an underlying issue that's either depleting them of nutrients, like such as birth control or gut inflammation or infection, mm-hmm. or there's something underlying that could be supported by supplementation, such as hypothyroid, cortisol imbalance, PCOS, or even just a consistently high intensity strength training mm-hmm. routine. So it's important to note that, and I think I got this number from Alan Christensen's book, The Mineral Fix, which is a great read, by mm-hmm. the way. But it said something like our food is about 30% less nutritious today mm-hmm. than it was about like 80 years ago.
Whoa.
So, yeah, pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that comes down to obviously like the soil our foods are grown in and all those components. But to answer the question, supplementation is usually a part of my nutrition care, mm-hmm. But it will never be in place of doing the fundamentals consistently, right? Like eating whole foods, drinking water, sleeping and living in alignment with your circadian rhythm, mm-hmm. Having a gratitude practice or mindful eating and those things. Those have to be in place, and supplementation as well supplements those things.
Perfect. So. Yeah. Agreed.
Well, you know, another thing that's becoming really popular these days, intermittent fasting, seems like a hot topic right now. And you've written a book called The Ultimate Guide to Intermittent Fasting for Women. What makes fasting in women different, and what's your approach to intermittent fasting?
Yeah, I could talk about this for hours.
We got time. Go ahead.
So before I go on a rant, I'll provide a little bit of context and just clarity for my verbiage. So when I say fasting or intermittent fasting from here on out, I'm just referring to intermittent fasting and time-restricted eating versus mm-hmm. a prolonged fast. So like the 16-8 or even a one meal a day approach.
Okay.
And what makes fasting different for women, and I won't even go into the benefits of fasting of improving, you know, metabolic markers or inflammation markers, et cetera, but the biggest difference when it comes to fasting for women are their hormones, right? Mm-hmm. So women in their reproductive years who are still cycling have to take that into consideration when fasting, because fasting is a stress. Mm-hmm. It's a hormetic stressor. It's a good stress, but it's still a stress. And when you stress your body too much, too often, there can be a cascade of hormonal effects that come from it. So let's say somebody learns about intermittent fasting. They're trying to lose weight. They see that a 16-8 has worked for someone else. Mm-hmm. They want it to work for them. So they start doing it every day. On top of that, they're doing HIIT workouts. Mm-hmm. On top of that, they're doing low carb. On top of that, they actually have kids to take care of and a job. And this person might feel fine at first, mm-hmm. but what happens next is they start to feel burnt out or fatigue, brain fog. And then if done long enough, their menstrual cycle starts, they either have anovulation or irregular periods. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the big components of this is, of course, how stress everything's connected, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the proteins or hormones, kisspeptin, is directly influenced by stress as well. And kisspeptin directly influences fertility. Hmm. So it really just depends on the individual, how they view fasting, how it fits into their life, and just understanding what points of their menstrual cycle is okay to fast, like the follicular phase when your hormones are low, versus your luteal phase when you're focusing on building that progesterone, your body's making a gland, your energy requirements are higher, and that's not a great time to fast. So the ebook was really just to give that context, as well as my other book too, which dives into a lot more detail about hormones and everything.
Yeah, awesome. Perfect. Well, even speaking of hormones and that stress response that you just alluded to, imbalance of the HPA axis is often overlooked by athletes or even average people just trying to lose weight. Do you see this cortisol stress response as playing a role in those who can't lose weight or who are plateaued?
Oh my goodness. Yes. And this is such a powerful component into not only just losing weight, but yeah, athletic performance and just quality of life. And the clients I get come to me because they've tried everything and nothing is working when it comes to belly fat, body composition, energy, sex drive, like everything mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. their life is off. And it really does relate to, yes, the HPA axis and the HPT and the HPO or mm-hmm. HPG, gonads, if you want to use that instead right. of ovaries. Mm-hmm. But everything is so connected. And what happens is, let's take your stress hormone, cortisol, for example. So cortisol is released from your adrenal glands in response to stress. And the stress can be perceived, so anticipatory stress, which is very interesting when you look at hormone testing. And what happens when they first wake up in the morning, and I see a huge spike of cortisol, I'm like, what was your day like, you know, when mm-hmm. you took that test? And right. they're either like, yeah, I had a super stressful day at work. They had to get their kids out. And so out of the house, like on time in the morning. And so just anticipating stress is a stressor. And yeah. then obviously, as well as physical stress, like an infection, diet, mm-hmm. or even exercise.
Right.
So when your body is perceiving this stress response, your hypothalamus tells your pituitary, who tells your adrenals, to release cortisol. And cortisol's main role, one of them, as it pertains to your weight, cortisol's main role is to provide your body with quick energy. So it does this by releasing stored fat, stored protein, stored glycogen to raise blood sugar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which your body then uses for energy, right? Right? So now think about this. If your body's releasing these stored energy, it's great if you're about to do a workout, right? Right. Mm-hmm. But when you're sitting at your computer stressed about work and your body doesn't need this readily available influx of sugar that enters your bloodstream, insulin rises and it packs it away for storage into your fat cells.
Right, so right.
That is very common. But in addition, how cortisol, like we've talked about, influences your sex hormones too, which could potentially lead to a state of excess estrogen just by the way it kind of lowers progesterone. That could lead to another whole cascade of events of uh-huh. inflammation or et cetera, that leads to, you know, stored belly fat and some weight gain as well. And then obviously how this pertains to athletic performance or athletes in general, if your body's too stressed, not recovering, your body's breaking down protein for energy, like I mm-hmm. just briefly touched on. Mm-hmm. So in addition to all of that, your stress response can interfere with your sleep and melatonin production, which affects your hunger hormones, ghrelin and leptin. It can lead you to craving sugar, salt, fatty foods. And so, yeah, all of this plays a huge role, and both overactive stress response, so overactive cortisol, and an underactive stress response, mm-hmm. low cortisol, which ends up happening anyway, mm-hmm. after the stress response has been happening for too long, mm-hmm. they both play a role in weight loss resistance and hitting a plateau in body composition or performance. And yeah, the stress response is the Goldilocks principle, right? You want just the right amount at the right time.
Right.
To support your body's processes.
Well explained. Well
yeah,
said.
For sure. And it's such a sticky wicket because, I mean, at the end of the day, like if you're working with weight loss, it's very common, like once you start to see results, like maybe incorporating the intermittent fasting and then, you know, somebody goes on the low carbohydrate and then they're doing HIIT training, you know, like all those things that you kind of lined up because they're like, I'm seeing results. Like, right. Oh my gosh, I'm going to do more. And then to convince them like, okay, well, let's just make sure parasympathetic is occurring too and recovery. So like, how do you convince somebody around the importance of mindfulness practices and what are some of your strategies for implementing them?
Yeah, this is great. And honestly, I get to work on this too myself.
Right.
I am not perfect. I am not immune to incorporating these things. But one thing that has worked that I love, like this is my favorite thing in the entire world. I learned this practice in grad school and it's changed the way I have eaten forever and just how I incorporate mindfulness into my day to day. And it's changed so many of my clients too. And that's mindful eating. Hmm. And this is one of my favorite practices because just like with any habit that you want to build and want to stick, you should start by stacking it on top of something. So that whole process of habit stacking. And when it comes to mindfulness, like everybody eats, right? Mm-hmm. So what can you do before your meal to tap into your rest and digest state? And that's just taking a deep breath. So I say like 4 seconds in, hold for 4 seconds, and a 6 to 8 second exhale. Like drop your shoulders and just relax and look at your food. Think about where your food came from, have a moment of gratitude for the food on your plate, notice it, sense it, just smell what's happening, like take a look at it. And all of these strategies and practices that you can implement before your meal really just puts you into that parasympathetic state. And it can be so powerful, not only for a moment of relaxation, regardless of your external environment, but also helps your body digest and absorb the nutrients. Because when you are in that sympathetic state, trying to have a meal, mm-hmm. that's when people like, they don't even put these things together, but that's what I try to help my clients with is your body needs to be in that parasympathetic state to truly digest and absorb your food properly and efficiently. Yeah.
That's really profound. So, I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt calmer listening to her explain that.
I know. I thought about
like I just went like
I thought about trying to implement it around my family dinner table. And the thought I had was like in that 4 seconds of trying to breathe, I think my son would be dumping his sippy cup of water all over the food. So I don't know that it would work as well, but like maybe I could do that on my own, like after the sippy cup
but
incident.
It's profound. It's really profound.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah.
It is. And I exactly like you said, I think when you have children and everything's like chaotic at the dinner table, you're like, you're not going to have a 15-minute mindfulness gratitude practice before your meal. So what I tell my clients is just like, try to take one deep breath. And even if you are taking that deep breath as you prevent the sippy cup from spilling or something, just one deep breath. And if that's all you can do, it's better than nothing. And so doing true. That throughout the day can be super supportive.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
True.
That's great.
So true. Well, speaking of, like the biggest hurdle to most people who want to optimize their health is that mindset. And so, you know, to change a habit requires some motivation. But how do you keep your clients motivated for consistency? with lifestyle change?
Asking for a friend.
Yeah, magic pill comes in again. No, when it comes to motivation for consistency, I believe there's three different areas, and they use three different areas I focus on with my clients. And the first is as it pertains to, you know, what they eat and just diet in general, quote unquote diet, but what they eat. You have to set them up for success. And that could be making sure their environment is conducive to being consistent by not having the foods in the house that would be unsupportive for their goals. Mm. And number two would be making sure that they are nourishing their body in a way that fuels themselves and shuts off their hunger hormones, because the key to consistency is that you can't rely on willpower. And when you're fueling with highly processed foods or not including protein, fat, and fiber with their meals, their physiology is not optimized. And when your physiology is not optimized and you're not eating appropriately to facilitate those hormones that regulate hunger, you're really just fighting your physiology and banking on willpower to stay consistent, which never works. So as their dietitian, it's my duty to give them the knowledge and tools and support they need to set their environment up for success, as well as their physiology. And then in addition to this, and I'm sure every coach will agree with, when it comes to consistency, you really have to acknowledge every little win, because that makes the difference over time.
Sure.
And last but not least, and arguably the most important, is having them connect to their why. So why do they want this behavior change? And whether it's wanting to have more energy for their kids or changing their diet to avoid getting on medication or healing debilitating GI discomfort so they can enjoy meals with their friends, or like a lot of the women that I work with, healing any hormonal imbalance that's affecting their day-to-day life. And it's really just connecting to that and optimizing your environment, optimizing the foods that you eat whenever possible. And yeah, and that's a lot to stay consistent. But again, it's one thing at a time. Do one thing every day, and that over time will lead to big change.
Great advice. That is great.
Yeah, for sure. And I, it's just so common. I feel like that so many people make this assumption that motivation is just kind of a factor of, as you said, willpower, right? It's like this person's strong and this person's not. And that's the reason why we adhere to the habits that we adhere to. And I like that you outlaid that with so much context. I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, it is. Context is everything. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how we have to also explain it to my clients too. And in that role, like, it is my responsibility to create a safe space between my client and myself and our working relationship, as well as helping them create a safe space within themselves. And that comes from continuous reminders that any change in behavior is not a linear process, and that every experience they have is feedback. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to learn what works for them and what doesn't.
So true.
That's great.
So true.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit about your most recent book called A Women's Guide to Optimizing Hormones? You touched on it a little bit earlier. A Women's Guide to Optimizing Health, Hormones, and Metabolism. And just kind of what you were going after in writing that.
Yeah. This makes me so excited to talk about because it is really just a one-stop shop for women who are trying to understand their bodies. And that's truly my why for writing this. Is it's not a novel. Think of it as like your pocket guide to reference quickly of like just learning about your body. And so the reason I wrote this is because I was on a mission like as I said, like, why are so many women struggling through the same thing? Fatigue, acne, digestion issues, menstrual issues, inability to lose that stubborn belly fat, and just overall not feeling like themselves. And I created this ebook to help them discover, well, to help them learn about the key hormones that are affecting their health, metabolism, mood, body composition. And then also providing a resource of like a roadmap of, okay, I'm feeling this way. Could this be related to this? What tests should I find out to confirm? And then if I confirm, what can I do with my diet and lifestyle and supplementation to support my body? And so many women just blame themselves for feeling this certain way, like there's something wrong with me, I'm broken, and they're not. And it's just simple, gentle shifts in their diet and lifestyle and overall just way they live their life that can be so simple yet so profound that can help them feel better. And that's really my why for helping, for writing this ebook, is to just teach women about their body, how their hormones fluctuate throughout their cycle, what should their cycle look like, and that the how they're feeling is not normal, even though it may be common for them and feel like normal because they felt it for so long.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I know there's so many women listening to this who are feeling heard and understood. And obviously, we're going to encourage them to go out and buy these two books, A Woman's Guide to Optimizing Health, Hormones, and Metabolism, as well as The Ultimate Guide to Intermittent Fasting for Women. But if there are women out there who want to work with you, how can they reach you? How do people connect with you? How can they sign up to be coached by you?
Yeah, thank you for that. And the best way to reach me at this very point in time is to head over to my Instagram, Julia Glanz, and slide into my DMs. I've got links in my bio on Instagram for all of the resources we've mentioned, as well as the option to connect over a phone call.
Awesome. Nice. Awesome. And we'll link to all of these in our show notes as well. And we can't thank you enough for spending time, Julie. But before we let you go, I know you've heard our show before. So you know that we asked this one final question that I'm going to kick to Michael Chapman.
Right. It's called the fireball. It's a ridiculous fireball question that there's no point in us asking other than just get to know you and to make you uncomfortable. And so today we're going to ask, the question is, how do you feel about karaoke? And do you have a signature karaoke song?
Oh my gosh, yes, Wagon Wheel Darius
Rucker. Yes, I love that. Nice. I love that song too.
That's a good one.
We talked about, do you know Wagon Wheel?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
yeah. Yes. That's a great one. Awesome.
We were just saying, anyone who has a signature song in karaoke, those are our people. So we love that.
Anytime you guys want to go karaoke, I'm here for it.
Let's do it. Do it. I'm ready.
Oh, well, Julia, this was amazing. And we can't thank you enough for all this really important information that you put out there. And we're so glad you spent time with us. And we hope we can have you on again soon.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. I love talking about this. And I appreciate you guys, what you do, and the information and content you provide. So thank you so much.
What do you think about the new fireball question?
I love it.
I think it's going to be a success.
I think it's going to be a polarizing answer.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I think there are two types of people in this world.
Yeah. Those who do karaoke and those who don't.
Those are the two.
Yes, we're going to find out.
Next time on The Lab Report, Dr. Christian Jensky.
Using functional medicine testing in practice.
Let's talk some case studies, baby.
Yes. You've been listening to The Lab Report. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and leave us a review. To learn more about Genova Diagnostics, visit our website at gdx.net. There you'll find information on specific testing, educational resources, and how to connect with our show. Call us at 1-800-522-4762 or email us at podcast@gdx.net. Speaking of karaoke, I was in the grocery store and I heard your signature song on the overhead music.
Yes.
Do you, if it comes on in the supermarket, do you sing along to that?
No, I don't do it in public places like that. I might get a smile across my face.
I almost wanted to.
I might do a little bit of the air guitar.
Whoa.
The solo.